In September 2022, something extraordinary happened in Lebanon. Ordinary citizens armed themselves and stormed banks. But they weren't stealing. They were desperately trying to withdraw their own frozen savings. One woman held up a bank with a toy gun just to access funds for her sister's cancer treatment. When your own money becomes inaccessible, the entire concept of banking collapses into absurdity. This isn't an isolated incident. Across Nigeria, 13% inflation has pushed millions toward cryptocurrency. Egyptians watched their life savings lose half their value overnight through currency devaluations. Even in wealthy nations, European and Japanese bonds offered negative yields. You literally paid governments to hold your money. Meanwhile, contradictory Federal Reserve policies triggered historic bank failures. Something fundamental is broken, and billions of people feel it in their bones, even if they can't articulate why. Our global financial system, built on outdated technology and questionable promises, is showing cracks that can no longer be ignored. Within tight-knit communities, people operate on flexible social credit mental ledgers of favors given and received. You help your neighbor move furniture, months later, they watch your kids. No money changes hands because trust and memory suffice. But strangers have no shared history. They face the double coincidence of wants. Each must have exactly what the other needs at exactly the same moment. The odds are terrible. Shells became humanity's first widespread currency because they were scarce, durable, beautiful, and labor-intensive to create. Tribes across continents independently converged on shell-based money. Dentellium shells on North America's Pacific coast, wampum on the Atlantic, cowrie shells around the Indian Ocean. Creating these required collecting, carving, polishing, and drilling, significant effort that gave them inherent value. Unlike perishable food or bulky tools, shell beads functioned as financial batteries, storing surplus time and resources in portable form. They eliminated the need for trust between strangers and represented final settlement rather than depending on memory or reputation. Shell money worked for millennia until European colonists industrialized its production. What once took days of skilled labor could suddenly be mass-produced in hours. Markets flooded with cheap shells, destroying their scarcity and devaluing everyone's savings overnight. This pattern repeated throughout history. Colonial Virginia's tobacco currency collapsed from overproduction. West African trade beads lost value when Europeans mass-produced glass counterfeits. Even Diablo II players used rare Stone of Jordan rings as currency, until game bugs enabled duplication, instantly destroying their monetary function. The lesson? Money isn't just shared delusion. If easily produced, savings get diluted as producers exploit the monetary premium. Good money requires genuine scarcity, difficulty to create despite advancing technology. This is measured by the stock-to-flow ratio, existing supply divided by annual production. Gold's ratio of approximately 67 means just 1.5% annual growth, the highest of any commodity. Even as technology advanced dramatically over millennia, gold remained costly to extract. This resilience explains why gold dominated as money across virtually every civilization that discovered it. For millennia, banking solved a simple problem. Gold is heavy and dangerous to move. Banks maintained ledgers, allowing merchants to trade by updating balances rather than physically transferring gold. This accelerated transactions, but settlements still moved at the speed of horses and ships. The telegraph in the 1830s and transatlantic cables in the 1860s shattered this equilibrium. Transactions could now occur at nearly the speed of light, while settlement assets crawled at traditional speeds. This divergence accelerated gold's abstraction into paper claims and ledger entries. By 1875, economist William Stanley Jevons observed UK banks held just 4-7% reserves, themselves fractional claims on gold. This extreme abstraction enabled World War I financing. When Britain's 1914 bond offering failed, the Bank of England created currency deposits from thin air. Every combatant printed money for war, doubling money supplies and consumer prices within 5 years. manipulating paper money became far easier than moving physical gold. Governments could now drain citizens' wealth quickly and invisibly. The Bretton Woods system tried restoring order by pegging currencies to the dollar, backed by gold. But from 1950 to 1970, America's gold reserves plummeted from over 20,000 metric tons to 9,000, while dollar supply tripled. In 1971, Nixon ended dollar-gold convertibility. For the first time in history, the entire global monetary system operated on pure fiat currency, paper backed by nothing scarce. After 1971's gold standard collapse, Treasury Secretary William Simon negotiated a pivotal 1974 deal with Saudi Arabia. The U.S. would purchase oil and provide military protection in exchange for Saudi investment in Treasury securities and exclusive dollar-denominated oil sales. This petrodollar system backed the dollar by ensuring global demand. Any oil-importing nation must hold dollar reserves to secure energy, but it creates stark winners and losers. Developed nations hold debts in their own currency and can print more to service obligations. Developing countries owe debts in foreign currencies, like dollars, a deadly mismatch where assets are local but liabilities are in dollars. When the dollar strengthens, their debt burden explodes, triggering economic crises. When currency crises hit, the IMF offers dollar financing with harsh conditions: currency devaluation, higher interest rates, increased taxes, ending subsidies, restricted spending. Wealthy nations rarely impose such austerity on themselves. Meanwhile, France maintains colonial-era control through the CFA franc, requiring former African colonies to hold reserves in France's custody while charging fees. Yet the CFA franc isn't even accepted in Europe. In February 2009, Satoshi Nakamoto released Bitcoin with a stark observation. The root problem with conventional currency is all the trust that's required to make it work. Bitcoin eliminated trusted third parties through a distributed public ledger, achieving global consensus every 10 minutes. Unlike gold, Bitcoin can be safely self-custodied in large amounts, sent globally within minutes, and transported anywhere by memorizing 12 words. Its finite supply of 21 million coins cannot be inflated by any authority. The network operates through thousands of independent nodes running open-source software. Miners compete to add blocks using computational power, with difficulty automatically adjusting to maintain 10-minute intervals. When China banned mining in 2021, half the network relocated internationally while maintaining 100% uptime, demonstrating remarkable resilience. Bitcoin's base layer processes about 400,000 daily transactions, comparable to Fedwire's settlement volumes. The Lightning Network handles everyday transactions through payment channels, enabling instant transfers without broadcasting to the entire network. This layered approach solves scaling challenges while preserving security and decentralization. Privacy protections in the U.S. Constitution's Fourth Amendment and UN's Universal Declaration of Human Rights are routinely ignored in the digital age. The 1970 Bank Secrecy Act enables complete financial surveillance. Edward Snowden's 2013 revelations exposed NSA surveillance, directly tapping telecommunication providers to harvest emails, video chats, photos, and social data without individual warrants. We should assume all our information sits in corporate databases, accessible to governments and vulnerable to breaches. Central banks are developing CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. As BIS head Augustin Karstens explained, CBDCs differ fundamentally from cash because central banks will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that determine the use and the technology to enforce that. Combined with facial recognition, this creates an Orwellian future where protesters can be automatically identified and their accounts frozen, already implemented in China. We face a choice: bottom-up digital money like Bitcoin that returns ledger control to people, or top-down CBDCs enhancing state control. Bitcoin offers a system where nobody can create money nearly for free or censor transactions without controlling over half the network. Separating money and state isn't about eliminating government. It's about creating transparency rather than silently inflating away citizen savings.